Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hamid, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamualaikum. Alhamdulillah, doing great.
Made it through another weekend.
Yes, we did.
It was another hard one, and the rain, the flooding everywhere.
Here we got the fecundating rain.
Yes.
The law described in the Quran. Yep.
I was looking at these. We're in Northern California, and they said Southern California got like 7.5 inches in the last couple of days, and they are still getting pelted.
You could say they're reeling. Yes, yes. Saw some of the footage, and Santa Barbara looks like it's going to float away.
Yay. There's a man talking on the news about seeing a piano floating in the street.
Mm-hmm.
Get out there and play a tune. Don't complain. Play some music. Mm-hmm. We always complain about of water in Southern California, you know. No need to complain. Let's make the best of what we have, right?
That's for sure.
Let's not do this. We are going to have quite a show planned today. Before we get there, I wanted to check in with you. We seem to get past the heaviness of the rain helping us. It seems we are being tilted each day with the reality check of what's going on around the world. I want to change our question this morning. Let's see. Let's start with what's making you smile, and then we'll go to the interview. What's making you smile?
I'm sorry, you sound a little distant. I'm not quite hearing.
What's making you smile? Instead of saying, let's do the heavier stuff afterwards. Let's start with what's making you smile. What's making your hijab tickle the back of your neck. Let's start there, and then you get into the heavier stuff after that.
Okay, all right. I've had a lot of chuckles this weekend at looking at some of the Instagram reels of children, and then also some seniors dancing. And I mean, I have been on the floor looking at some of those. So it helped to relieve some of the pressure from seeing or hearing about some of the heavyweight things you're talking about going on in the world. But yes, that's one thing that had me just chuckling. I saw one, at first I chuckled at it, but then when I went back and looked at it again, it had me on the floor just thinking about it. Makes me laugh because, you know, triggers that trigger memories. I can't even talk about it.
Right.
So there was one of a mother talking about don't pay a whole lot of money to get your kid's hair braided. Braid the hair yourself. And when she finished with that, her daughter's head. What made me laugh so much is I remember laughing with my daughter. Had a hairstyle I put her in once when she was a little child, and she will not let me forget it till this day. Didn't look as bad as the one on Instagram. But when I see it, I think of that conversation and my daughter rolling her eyes at me when I said, I didn't think that hairstyle was that bad. So, yeah, I'm sorry. Could not help but chuckle on that one. That was funny. Sometimes I think parents are doing things that will scar a child for life when you look back on it.
Don't touch me ever again.
Exactly.
Sometimes we need those. I was listening to on that same kind of thing. I was listening to, I don't know, I ran across a video of Dave Chappelle. He was talking about he was, his son wanted to, his son was looking at his phone and he was watching something. And he said, "What you watching?" He said, "He's against $250. He said, $250? You need $250 for your tent. And he said, "Kevin Hart's coming." I want to go see Kevin Hart.
Oh, my goodness.
He said, "Look at it." And he said, "You realize I'm a comedian." And he said, "Yeah, Daddy, but Kevin Hart's funny."
Oh, my goodness.
He said, not only did he want to punch him in the neck, he said, "But I can't hit my children." He said, "But I don't think I was just mad because he wanted to see Kevin Hart. I wanted to be mad because his tickets cost $125. Mine cost $18. And he said, "I called my agent." And then he was like, he said, "Okay, the ticket cost $125. Why you need $250? And he said, "Because I want to take you, Dad."
No.
He was torn between thinking it was a good gesture and the fact that he got to go see another comedian and go see his contemporary. So they go to the comedy act, and he said he goes and the place is packed. It's like thousands of people there, which makes him even more mad. And he's doing the math in his head on how much Kevin Hart is making.
Making compared to his little $18.
He ate up. The people are laughing, and they laughing hard, and they crying. And he's sitting here, and the more jokes he tells, and the more people laugh, he getting even more mad. And his son is sitting there cracking up at Kevin Hart. And so he is hot. And up at the end, and they start clapping, and he claps, and he realized don't nobody recognize him, so he getting even more mad.
Not even madder.
So he's suing at this point. And he's telling his son, "Okay, let's go." And his son says, "With the way your children look at you," he says, "Dad, I have to meet him." Yes, and he look at him like, "Dad." He said, "You know him, right, Dad?" He says, "I haven't talked to him in years, but he's looking at his son and thinks the world of him, and he's like, nah, I got to go back here and talk to this man." So he goes backstage, and he said, Kevin Hart's goons are back here. That's what he called it. He said, he goes back there, and Kevin Hart, he said, "Hey, what's up, Dave? What you doing on this side of town? It ain't safe over here." He said, "Man, I live over here." Kevin Hart sees it. And he said, "Well, Kevin, get ready to eat dinner, so y'all gonna have to come back." And Kevin said, "Wait, who you talking to? Who you talking to?" He pushes past his security. He said, "Dave, what's up, homie?" And he does the greeting or whatever. He said, "Wait, y'all hungry? You want to come in? We got some eat." And his son pushes past him and says, "Yes, we're hungry. We haven't eaten in like hours." It's difficult to embarrass your parent like we just starving you to death. This is Dave Chappelle is telling the story. They go in, and he says, now this man don't have a regular backstage, you know, snacks. He has steak and lobster and baked potatoes and the whole Sunday dinner. And his son goes in, and he is going at it. He eating like he that was just released from juvenile detention. His face never comes up for air. And he looked at him like he whispered, "Slow down, son. Why you in here eating like we'll feed you at home?"
Yes, sir.
And then there's a box in the corner of local sports team jerseys, K Hart in the back, and a number. And he sees him looking at it. Kevin Hart sees
Dave Chappelle looking at it, and then he goes over and he gets the jersey and he tosses it to his son, and his son's like, "Oh, Mr. Hart, thank you so much." And he said, "Yeah, when your dad make you mad, put that on."
He said he was calling it on God, Dave. So that. And I don't even know how I got this video, but I did. There we go. So now, and before we get to the serious ones, I know I sent you a text last night. I sent several people text last night. There was a MSNBC special on last night, so some of you listeners may have seen it. And if you didn't, try and check it out. On MSNBC last night, they had a special one called Black Men in America, The Road to 2024. And they were talking about, there were two journalists and documentary filmmakers talking about their journey around the United States to find out the opinions of different sectors of black men across the United States. They're mostly East Coast and Midwest, and cities like Atlanta, Chicago, New Jersey, New York, D.C. area. But what they were thinking that politicians needed to know or didn't know or didn't get in what about black community, but specifically black men, and why, what they thought. In the end, they really thought that they were being left out of the conversation. They were not being included. They were not, and what specifically they were being excluded about. So I wanted to talk about that in a little bit when our guest comes on, which we're going to let her on in about. We're going to bring her on in just one moment because we're going to ask her what's going on with her. But before we do that, I wanted to ask you now about what's making your hijab shift. I know mine feel like it's choking me sometimes, but talk to us about what's making your hijab shift. And I want to bring on Mr. Layla. So talk to me.
Well, before I do that, let me just make this one thing that was just really great, and I would encourage our audience members, if they get a chance to see Origin, Ava DuVernay's latest film out, it was just, I thought, such a well-made movie. The message is phenomenal, and she really did a great job. I have not read Isabella Wilkerson's cast. I've read some reviews of it, and I've heard people talk about it. I just had not gotten around to reading it. And the movie, what Ava DuVernay did was, after reading the book, She felt that there was a story there. So she met with Isabella Wilkerson and talked with her about how did she, you know, put together the book, blah, 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 blah. And from those conversations plus the book, she came up with a story that she felt she would look good on the screen. And really it's an excellent job that she did. People have to realize it's going to be probably different if you go and read the book than the film, because it's, you know, it's an adaptation, so based on, it's not exactly what you'll find in the book, but it was so well made. And with Black History Month, you know, celebrating the arts, she is really outstanding, coming from her artistic view to be able to pull that story out of that book. Hijab is shifting with, I could never be a politician. I know I couldn't. I just don't hard to, I don't have the heart, I don't think, to be a politician. But what has my hijab shifting is the U.S., let me see if I can name all of the countries because they all share in this outrage. The U.S., the European Union, EU, Germany, Canada, UK, Finland, Italy, and Australia have suspended their funding of the United Nations Refugee Relief Agency, UNRWA, because Israel, the state of Israel, charged that, and they alleged that 12 or 13 employees of UNRWA there in Gaza took part or had some connection with the October 7th event. Now, they alleged this, they said, based on Israeli intelligence after the International Court of Justice rendered their decision that there was probably a good basis for saying that genocide is being committed by Israel because of the way in which they are have attacked Gaza in retaliation for October 7th. So no investigation had taken place, and yet these countries had decided to suspend their funding because it's voluntary to this relief agency. Now, UNRWA has 13,000 staff there in Gaza, and you're going to say 12 of them participate in October 7th, so therefore we're not going to fund humanitarian aid to the 1.9 million people. I just don't understand how our administration could be so callous and so really, I don't know, schizophrenic. I don't know what would be the correct psychological terminology for it, but the politician in Biden goes after the settlers in the West Bank by saying, okay, we're going to sanction them, at the same time when he is going to take part in a genocide that's being committed. So I don't understand it. And then after that, Israel walked back that number from 12 to 6. And they say they got it, initially they said they got it as a result of interrogations, which translates to torture. And then they said, sources have provided this information on these now 6 employees. Now, the 12 women terminated their services immediately. But the fact that there hasn't been any investigation to verify what the Israeli authorities are choosing to charge these people with is just crazy to me. And 154 of UNRWA's staff had already been killed. This was a couple of days ago. The number was up to 154 there in Gaza. There's been damage to 141 UN installations. By installations, I mean warehouses, shelters. In addition, 4 out of the 22 health facilities are only operational now. So that means 18 have been bombed and destroyed or bulldozed by the IDF forces. And Israel continues to target UN facilities, especially those that are almost structures which have been serving the civilian population of Gaza. So I just don't understand. I just don't understand how politicians and leaders who profess to be God-fearing people or Christians or Jews or whatever, how they could take these kinds of policy actions. So Let me hold on to my hijab. No problem. What's going to be reported today? That's it.
Thank you, thinkers. There's a lot. And I'm going to respond to it, but before I do, I'm going to unmute Sister Leia because I'm going to ask her. I'm going to introduce her in a moment, and then I'm going to ask her something similar about how her heart, what warms her heart and what makes her reach out. She's in the same vein as we do most of our guests. But first I want to... You know what, let me introduce her first, and then I want to say something about it because I was listening to the program this morning on NPR that this got me thinking about this, and same thing. There's an inner turmoil going on here. Let's get Sister on. So, Sister Layla, this generation Muslim here in this place we call America, educator, community advocate, Philadelphia born, Chicago reared, currently living in New Jersey. Graduate of University of Islam or Sister Claire Muhammad School system. She holds a degree in child development, extensive studies in behavior science. She's a certified domestic violence advocate, a certified private mediator, a Reiki practitioner, certified, that is. Most of you know her parents, Imam Worsuddin Muhammad and Sister Shirley Allen Muhammad, and her grandparents, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Sister Claire Muhammad. May God be pleased with all of them. Let this really put an example for her. From a very young age, this sister has had an almost DNA invoked passion about service and volunteering. I don't know how you couldn't be a public servant, sister. She has had an extraordinary life. And so some of the things I want her to talk about today is going to feed into exactly what we're talking about now. We had an opportunity to sit with Sister Layla at our women's retreat a few months ago and listen to some of the writings. Those of you who may not know, she is an extraordinary poet. And she's got 3 books of poetry. Right now, the first sharing, the second up to be filled, and our latest is Sitting Under the Tree, which are poems commemorating Juneteenth. Reading those poems give you an insight into not only her life, but the work that she's been doing, especially with domestic violence survivors. She has won the President's Lifetime Achievement Honors, which is extraordinary. And to receive it from not just President Biden, but Vice President Harris is an extraordinary achievement, especially to get it, most people get it posthumously, but to get it now. In 2024, March 2nd, Women Open to Motivate Benevolence. She's going to be, and I'm going to have her talk to this more. It's an organization called WOM. The WOM Awards Gala is happening
there's a Maya Angelou documentary screening. She will be talking about it, but I wanted to mention that because many of us as possible should be there. But this daughter, granddaughter of two of the most beloved leaders of Muslims here in America, has made her own imprint, especially for Muslimas. I wanted to ask you, Sister Layla, who's got your hijab shifting? And what has your heart warmed this Monday morning? I know I caught you off guard with that question because I catch everybody off guard with that question. What has your heart warming? What has your hijab shifting? You got to adjust some pins. Talk to us.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you. Yes, and thank you, dear sisters, for including me in this conversation. So on this Monday, what's got my heart warm is here lately, I am very grateful just that I have another day and that I am able to maybe not move around the house and take care of myself exactly the way I used to. It's different now, but I can still do it. And so that warms my heart. That's what's warming my heart. Now, what has my hijab, you said, shifting?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so, you know, that could be a whole list. But I think this morning what has my hijab shifting is that that the scratch or the itch or the shift that is in my hijab is also in so many other sisters. Because I just finished another 3-day retreat this weekend. And, yes, it was in Somerset, New Jersey. It was diverse, around Muslims. We had Pakistani Muslims, Turkish Muslims, and African-American Muslims. And we had a wonderful 3 days together. But we did talk about those things that make our hijab shift. And it's just the stuff about life, you know, your childhood, you raising children, marriage. And then we talked a lot about the aging process and not necessarily the physical part, but how you begin to think and see things so differently as you get older and how these things that seem to be bad years ago when you heard something bad, that now in life experience, you can kind of look at the bad and see the stars in the sky and see the goodness there, and that it's just Allah's mercy giving us these challenges in life to bring us closer to Him, inshallah. So I think that's what's making my hijab shift, that I'm feeling the struggle, but it's bringing me closer to Allah.
That's something we all can relate to. For me, I was thinking about this a lot on the drive here this morning. I was listening to the report on NPR, Sister Amatola, and it was, especially when it comes to the foreign policy. And one of the things that I noticed is that, and I've been watching this and soaking it in, is that, yes, you know, Israel changed those numbers from 12 to 6 and then all of this. But the fact that we're reacting on an accusation, nothing proven in court, an accusation. And then I watched a special Dateline, I think it was, or one of the shows, and they were talking about Interpol. And the way Interpol works, and the way Interpol works is that, you know, you can, the way it has been successful all these years is that any of the member organizations can bring up an allegation against someone, a group, an organization, an individual, and there's an investigation put out, right? Now, you don't have to prove that organization or that person has done it. And that has always been the complaint. And organizations like Russia or companies like Russia or Israel or Sally or some organizations have had a history of using it to target enemies of their state or enemies of, you know, people who are against whatever they, who don't agree with them. And this was very reminiscent of that, right? This action, because it's an accusation, it's not proven. Even so, for those who may not know, UNRWA, the organization, the UNWRA, decided to terminate the employment of those accused personnel just because they did not want to stop that. They were thinking of the greater good of the Palestinians, people who were going to benefit from their support. So they said, okay, fine, no problem. We'll terminate those employees who are accused. So now what? Because we know that the welfare of these individuals, because they are the major agency in that region to provide food, water, medical supplies, etc. And all of the other nonprofits, all of the other agencies in the region said, we do not have the capacity to pick up if UNRWA does not, aid is not restored. And still, it is not restored. The impact, if international funding is not restored to UNRWA, it is part of the War Crimes Act, right? Because it says that the occupying power must take care for and support the occupied territory. There's no other agency capable of taking up that support. That is the argument that was made on Friday in court. Anybody wants to look at it, look for the Center for Constitutional Rights. I was listening to it this morning. Maria Lahoud, who's an attorney for them, was talking about it. And so the argument is this. The coincidence that I saw, that I was thinking about, is that this accusation occurred the same day as the international court proceeding. The exact same day. The international accusing not just Israel, but all of the, you know, United States, UK, anybody who's supporting them, of genocidal acts against the Palestinians. It's no coincidence. That bothers me the most is not this. What bothers me the most is this. We have so much power right now. And I'm speaking to United States, those who are eligible to vote in the United States. I don't want you to get so caught up in, like we keep talking about November elections. I know what the polls say. I know that people are coming and talking about elections. And I want us to know that the elections are very important. But they're important for a different reason than what I think you think I'm going to say. Yes, I want all of us to vote in the election, but I also want you to understand your power. Don't get so caught up in what's going to happen in November that we forget the urgency of right now. We have the power to exercise the power of community. And I heard that phrase yesterday, Sister Matala, when we were on our meeting, about the lesser of two evils, right? And there's always that argument about the lesser of two evils. And that's our so-called limitation of choice. And what I don't like that framing it that way and we don't get distracted by that, I do think we have an opportunity to wield our power to shape and reshape U.S. foreign policy if we take the opportunity right now. There's an urgency to this. There's an urgency to this, but it doesn't work if we don't use our power for it. The United States has an unflagging, unyielding support of someone who is committing a campaign of genocide. And not just one, so now we've entered two other countries. Now we're bombing two other countries. And if U.S. continues to provide this kind of support, it's just an indication of the case to be made that there's no value on black and brown bodies. And we can make a case that our power will be withheld unless the value is restored. That is the power that we hold. But we don't just withhold it for no reason at all. We withhold it. That is our negotiate. I'm a negotiator by trade, and that is what we negotiate with. You want something from me, I want something from you. Here's our negotiating tool.
Echo.
The tragedy with our government is that we don't, our first reaction is not necessarily negotiations all the time. I was just thinking, you know, if you look from, let's say, 1945 to the present, this country has been in conflict after conflict after conflict, whether you want to call it a war or not. You want to call it, the popular media right now is calling it a war by proxy. You know, the words that they use for those who may not have been on the Study Al-Islam broadcast yesterday with Imam Nasser Ahmed, he did an excellent presentation talking about words. You know, we have the phrase words make people that Imam Muhammad gave us, but he talked about the relationship between words and the emotions that they trigger. It was an excellent program. For those who want to hear it next week, Study Al-Islam will have it up on their website. But the point that I wanted to make was that it has gotten to the point where with the popular media and all the communication tools that are out there now, the different platforms, it's as though we take war as a common occurrence, you know. And so, therefore, we should not be surprised that we have so much violence in our civil society. People will resort to shooting or fighting or whatever rather than trying to mediate or negotiate or talk things out. And that we would need legislation. I'm going to get back to Sister Layla for, you know, dealing with violence against women, because all of my life, violence has just been, you know, a common everyday occurrence. You know, we take it just for granted. It's something to be expected. You know, we see violence in public places and we've become so immune to it that even the violence that we experience in our homes, we come to accept it and we're traumatized by it, and we go out into the society as really broken and hurt individuals. And the common expression, hurt people, hurt people, you know, is right there in front of us.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I wanted to answer that because I wanted to bring it back to, yeah, women and children, because I wanted to ask you about that, Sister Layla. What do you see, especially when it comes to the women and children, and with all of this that's going on nationally and internationally in your work?
Yes, well, I'd really like to bring us to your question and this the answer to your question in this way. Firstly, I'd like to applaud you for what you said, that we don't get diverted and just focus on the emotionalism and the fact that there's an election coming up in November, but that we know that we have power every month of the year, every day, and that we understand our power. Because that's the beauty of America. As Imam Muhammad said, there's an ugly America, there's a beautiful America. But because we are Americans, we can grow, but also put a light on the beauty, and it can shine brighter than the ugly. But the next thing is related to what both of you were talking about in your question. In domestic violence, which I have known all my life from the day I was born, because as you said, Sister Amatula, that it's in our homes, in our families, et cetera. But when I began to understand it professionally was in the late 90s, and I took some courses and became a domestic violence advocate, and then since then, I have been able to evolve my understanding, and where I am now, where I have been for several years now, like a decade, is that I truly embrace what I was taught in the beginning, and that is plain simple that domestic violence is power and control. And domestic doesn't just mean partners, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend. It means a domestic setting. So you can be on a college campus and have a roommate, or you could be in the workplace, and most of us spend more time on the job than we do at home. So that's our family. And if you have power and control in the workplace, it's domestic violence. So my work has not just been with women and children. I have an open policy for women, and that my number is public, and they can call me anytime. And that's because women are the first teachers, actually. And the second thing that I'd like to point out is that domestic violence is a learned behavior. So I feel that if we educate and protect the women, then we will be able to somehow prevent it being passed on to the children. But men are free to contact me. Also, women abuse. Abuse is not just to one gender. It's several different types of abuse. And what I see in the world, especially it was highlighted during the last administration with our last president, and that is the power and the control and the verbal abuse that he extended upon just about every class of people, every type of people, not class, every type of people. He talked about different cultures. He talked about disabled, military. And that's power and control in his biggest way, because that's the leader of this country being able to do that. And so how do I see this affecting this war that, like she said, we've been living in war all these years? It's affecting our children in really almost like it's terrorizing them, because they have lived in their whole life seeing war. And not, I mean, and our country and the media names war. They decide to say what's a war. But a war is a war. And even if it's not on our land, but if we're fighting somewhere else and we're reporting that our military is being killed, then we're at war. And we've been at war for decades, as Sister Amatula said. So that's one of my really big concerns, that I think most children that are, and not even children, now they're like in their 40s, but anybody under 40, they think it's okay to first react in a state of war. They don't think that you need to sit down and talk. They don't know anything about being non-reactive and give yourself a moment to take a rational, just make a rational decision. Lastly, I'm going to say this, something, you know, that my mother used to say, may Allah forgive her and grant her paradise. She passed in November. But she used to tell me that war makes money. And now that I'm, now that I'm more intentional about looking and seeing, that's what's going on and that's what has been going on. If you look into any of these wars, find out who made the money, who sold the weapons, who gave more land. That's what it's about. And it's horrible, but it's true. It's nothing personal. It's all about money and power, which takes us back to what is domestic violence, power and control.
Yes.
And it's horrible. Yeah, it's horrible. Because I can remember being a little girl and sitting on the floor, you know, and seeing the violence of the 60s and seeing the Palestinians and Israel, you know, fight. And I haven't become numb or cold, but I've become very, I just believe it. You know how Maya Angelou said that if a person does something, you should believe it? And when I hear about what's happening to the Palestinians, and I know many, I know people that have families. I mean, I know, and I've heard stories, and I've talked to people, and I know some people that were there when this so-called war broke out. However, I'm not surprised, because isn't that what was done to the Native Americans? And we can have go on and on and on of so many people throughout time that has been done to. So I just think that we even in our support for each other, we need to be rational, and so that we can do like the sister said, and show that we are valuable, because that's the problem. The world leaders are putting value on material things, land, money, but the value of human beings has been long lost decades ago.
Yes, yeah. So true.
This is. And on the other side of that is, and we're going to take a quick break in a moment, but the other side of that is, and we keep asking them to value us. We can't ask them to value us. Why are we asking? Yes, that is the exact problem. Why are we seeking validation and requesting someone else to validate our humanity? They're not going to do it.
We have to value ourselves.
Now, listen, I'm going to say this, and I know we've been recording, so I'm going to be careful how I say it. I don't condone what the tactics of the Houthis, but I understand. So you're not going to give supplies
and food and water to the children. You're going to starve the children? But you got these supplies and water and food going everywhere else? I'll take that. I'll take it. That's what, that's their attitude. They said that if you gonna come through this horn of Africa, if you wanna come around here with all of these food and water and supplies, medical supplies and everything else, if you gonna come through here, all up and through here, teasing everybody with all of this food and water and supplies and medical goods, and you think you're going to keep starving all of these children, and you're going to come up in here and killing people, and you're going to take this and hold it hostage, we got news for you. And so they took it upon themselves. Now, that's gangster. That's total gangster.
Well, but what's gangster?
Now, the Houthis saying, we're going to take it from you. Come up in here again. Keep coming in.
No, I hear you, but is it gangster? Is it gangster or is it human? Because
I
said that we have to take ourselves out of oppression. Yeah.
No, but I'm saying it's gangster from that aspect. It's gangster from
Yes. Okay. No. Yes, I understand.
I'm telling these guys here in this country who think they gangster, you need to watch some news. Now that is taking it into your own hands and saying, no, I'm not going to ask you to please feed me, please give me water, please give us medical supplies. Oh, you think you're going to starve these little children to death and we just going to sit here and die? Tell you what, bring your ship over here again. Bring your ship over here, I dare you. Bring your ship over here again with your medical supplies and your water and your food while we have babies starving. Well, we got people in the hospital. There was a woman who gave birth and had to take her newborn child back into a tent. A tent.
Yes, it's horrible. It's horrible.
But the United States is sitting here defending it, saying that, well, they have a right to defend themselves. Because six people may have participated It may have no proof, nothing else, but somebody's accusation may have pretended or participated in killing 1,200 people on October 6th, but now you killed in the tens of thousands. No.
And the country that you give, like, look at the latest spending package, $10 billion. For humanitarian aid in the conflict zone, okay? But you send the munitions, Sister Shirley Muhammad would say war means money. You spend $14.1 billion to Israel for weapons and munitions that they buy from your Raytheon and your Boeing, your U.S. companies. So that money is being diverted from the taxpayers to Israel back to the war suppliers, which are, some of them are U.S. companies, some of them are Israeli companies. So it's like a shell game, you know, like a three-card Monty. You know, where is it? Where is that little, where's the card or where's the little P under the shell, you know?
Right.
I think it was Republican President Eisenhower who warned this country of the military-industrial complex would cause this country, because he saw how we've just been enmeshed in war after war, conflict after conflict, going all over the world. Now think about that $14.1 billion. What could it do here at home for the veterans in the tents out in the street, for the people who have been traumatized and have severe mental challenges in the tents in the street or sleeping in their cars, the low-paid workers that have to sleep in the car with their two or three children in the car so that they can survive.
Yes, you're absolutely right. May I ask you all a question, or just hear what do you say about this? As our sister said, that if you go back several decades, since the 40s, we see this war. So that, among other things, says to me that it's not a particular administration in America that supports this, because we've had Republicans, we've had Democrats over that period of time, and everybody does the same thing. So how do we, because we know that we're valuable and we know that we have human capital, how do we change this system? Because it's a system that's doing this. We've been sending billions of dollars to Israel forever. And so there's a system that's doing this. So how do we change the system, as opposed to using an individual like the president that's sitting as the scapegoat? He is wrong, but he's a part of a system.
Yeah.
Right. This is what I said earlier about this more strategic in knowing that this is the U.S. foreign policy that has to change.
Exactly.
So we have to get people in place. We have to get people in place who believe in changing policy. And this is where we have to be very strategic in making sure that we recruit and elect, retain the right people in office.
And elect and retain the right people to what positions? How do you change policy? Is it the grassroots? Is your aldermen? Is your council people? Or is your senators?
It's got to be all of it, but it's got to be in foreign policy. It's a federal position, so you got to get people in Congress, in your House of Representatives, in your Senate, and then they have to be on in positions that will put them on foreign and domestic policy committees, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
Step is to get them elected into Congress, get them elected into the Senate. We have a few, but we need people in positions where, and then they have to be willing, able to say no, right?
Yeah.
Not all of them are going to. Barbara Lee is not Muslim, right?
Right.
Barbara Lee was quick to say no. Right. And the only one on the record who consistently says, nah-uh, mm-mm. Not on my watch, not on my dime, not in my name. And you have a few other ones like that. And so you got to have people in the places of power and influence who are willing to not write a blank check for war, and especially against black and brown people. Our bodies are not commodities.
Right.
And when people end that, I mean, and from the beginning of time, it's part of the colonization of the world.
And
take a quick break, but I do want to come back and talk about that. I mean, and this goes into what you're talking. I mean, the work that you do, right? Let's just be frank and honest about this. We know that in order for domestic violence to be effective, you have to have someone in a position of power and someone in an inferior position, in a position of fear. And in order for capitalism to work, somebody has to be on the bottom. Somebody has to be, there's just the way it works. America is a place where we always need to have oppressed people. That's how capitalism works. That's how it functions, which impacts us on just so many levels. It doesn't matter who it is, but somebody has to be on that bottom. And this is why you have homelessness.
This is why we have a hard time fighting homelessness. And so let's talk about it more in a moment. Let's take a quick station break. But I do want to make sure that we bring that up, because I think a lot of people think that there's a quick fix. But there's no quick fix when that's the way this works. This system was built on this premise that somebody has to be on the bottom at all times. And most of the time, it looks like you or me. All right, don't go anywhere. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
Family, community, city, state, country, and more. Everything starts with you, the individual, you. What is the character of you? Are you a book? Can you be read? Join us every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a wonderful hour of information being shared by you, with you, for you, the you in all of us. I am Martha Naila Abdullah, and I am your host for Community Developmental Stages. Again, every Friday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., be there.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Fitra Muhammad bringing you good news. Study Al-Islam Life Topic Series 2020 is back. How many times have you wondered, when reading the Quran, what were the challenges and circumstances that Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was facing when Allah sent the angel Gabriel with inspired revelation? Join us at 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time every Sunday to learn from our scholarly speakers. If you were unable to connect because your carrier charged the fee, you may now listen online at am360.org. For a complete schedule of our speakers, email studyalislam@gmail.com or pick up the Muslim Journal. Thank you.
Join us for Muslim American Power 5 on Mondays, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Muslim American Power 5, referred to as MAP5, featuring Sister Amatullah Sabri, Sister Cheryl Sadi, and Brother Fleming Alamein. That's Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time for MAP, Muslim American Power 5.
All right. We are back on the air. Thank you for joining us this morning on Muslim American Power 5, MAP 5. This is Cheryl Stubbins, one of your hosts. Here with Sister Martila Elijah Sabri, and we are honored to have with us this morning Sister Leila Mohammed. Before we took the break, we were talking about the concept of capitalism and the structure of this colonizing nation, United States, and why we have what leads to things like, you know, domestic violence and homelessness and just the whole nature of how this country was even structured, and this notion of somebody's got to be on the bottom.
which is why it's hard for us to rectify some of the wrongs that are going on in our society. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that, sister.
Yes, I would suggest that we do some deep research into this country and specifically put a light on study the first 10 years and how it came up, how this country came about, starting with the War of Independence, where everyone in this country, the colonists that were here, European Americans, Native Americans, the different tribes, and the Africans, many of them enslaved, or I should say the majority enslaved, and some were free. They all fought and won the independence collectively. All of them became independent of Britain. And for 10 years, it was looked at just as that. We were all free. And then this idea came about after the Declaration of Independence. And the Declaration of Independence is what is America. But then 10 years later, there became the Constitution. And the Constitution is what can be written, unwritten, erased, crumbled, twisted, and that's when our problems started. At least that's my understanding. And that's why I'm saying I invite us to go back to the Declaration of Independence to study the first 10 years of the United States of America, because the change took place at that point. We were all free. We didn't need civil rights because we fought side by side and won our freedom from Britain. But like Dr. Nasser Ahmed said, as you shared, sister, words are powerful. And so if they treat you bad and tell you you're a slave and then say, but we can do this for you. We'll have a constitution and we'll do this and we'll do that. You just are reacting emotionally and thinking, well, I'm being treated bad, so I must be a slave. And you forget that you fought side by side with them for your freedom, and you don't need them to make you free. And I think that's what's happening. Yeah, you know, and that's what's happening to us now, that we don't even know when we became free. We don't even know who we are.
You know, it's funny.
And you asked another question. I was going to say this. And the problem also is that the colonists, most of them had been abused in Europe. And in domestic violence, you learn a behavior. You know how you may be a child that grew up in a household where there was fighting and abuse, and you say, you're never going to do that. And then when you're in your 20s and 30s or maybe 40s, then you catch yourself doing the same thing that you saw. So these European Americans who were abused and enslaved and treated bad in their country, well, now they got power, and they flipped it and went back to the behavior that they knew, and they became the abusers.
Right.
Good point.
It's funny.
I think that Brother Fleming may have joined us, and he has his hand up. Include him. I know the professor has some history in politics and economics he wants to put in that 30 seconds that he has.
Brother Fleming, welcome to the show. Brother Fleming. Before you say something, let me just say this real quick. I want to say this to everybody, and then I see we got a guest. Do we have somebody else in the hand up? Yeah, we do. I want to say this to everybody. If you do not already, it's funny that you brought up the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States of America, Sister Layla, because I happen to have, I wish we were on Zoom so everybody could.
I happen to have, and Brother Fleming, I know you're going to laugh. Don't be judging me. A pocket Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States of America in my handbag. I keep one in my handbag for just this reason right here. Right here. It's funny because
Do you have an extended version, the whole entire Declaration of Independence?
I have.
Because that's the problem, too. They only show parts of it.
Nope. I have the press. And then I have this little part that says, it has this preface in it. And it's, I want to just say this part that because of what you just said. There's this part in here that says, we are all created equal as defined by our natural rights. Our natural rights.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, no superior to those of anyone else. This is like in the preface. I don't know how to say the word, whatever. Thus, no one has rights superior to those of anyone else. Moreover, we are born with these rights. We do not get them from government. Indeed, whatever rights or powers government has come from us, from the consent of the governed, quote unquote. And our rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness imply the right to live our lives as we wish, to pursue happiness as we think best by our own lights, provided only that we respect the equal rights of others to do the same. Drawing by implication on the common law tradition of liberty, property, and contract, its principles rooted in right reason, quote unquote, the founders thus outlined the moral foundations of a free society. Only then did they turn to government. That's what I wanted to make, because when we instituted government, the Declaration to say to secure our rights, our natural rights, and the rights we create as we live our lives, but the powers of the government came after that. Sir.
Yes.
I just wanted to listen. I sound like I would say 30 seconds only. First, welcome my sister Layla. It's so good to hear her voice. I remember you coming to Wake Forest University here in Winston-Salem with your father and Winston-Salem State and Salem College, and we had him here for the weekend. And you were such a pleasant addition with your poetry innate abilities to share. And I only regretted we couldn't get Aunt Maya Angelou, because she hadn't got a time the weekend that your father was here. But and a very quick note, though, in terms of our Articles of, Confederation, which we had before the United States Constitution, those articles really align more with the Declaration of Independence. And in the book, Democracy and Al-Islam, written by Imam Razuddin Muhammad, he recognizes that the lifeline of this country really is in what our sister just quoted. The lifeline of the country being simply, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men, should have said men and women, of course, which is talking about the 1700s, are created equal, endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That concept really was the lifeblood of this country. And so when they first tried to come up with a way to run the country, it only lasts for about 8 years. Because they didn't have authority in that document to even tax each other. It was based on a voluntary effort from each one of the colonies at that point, or states as we call them today. And so you had some issues there, especially between Maryland and Virginia. They almost went to war with each other, even after the Declaration of Independence was written. So a lot of issues forced them to come back to Philadelphia to come up with another plan. But technically speaking, they were not even authorized to write the new plan of government.
Exactly.
Let me say it again. They were not authorized to write this new plan of government. So these 55 old men, as they call themselves, hung out in Philadelphia. And if you have a chance to go to Philadelphia and go to some of those historical sites, and one of those buildings where the Committee of Five wrote the Declaration of Independence, you'll see about four different copies. You'll see them editing each draft. In the very first draft, believe it or not, they have the word slavery included in that document. Now, those five, most of us know about Thomas Jefferson because he was well known for his writing skills, but there were four other people involved in drafting that document. And so we should study very close, as you said, those first 10 years of this country and see what was the understood reality of human beings in the country then. Other than the Indians, who really been subjected to all kinds of hardships and ruled over almost in an inhumane way. But even they were recognized in some parts of the country then as having certain rights, and they had 12 different tribes that still existed then. But with that said, I just really tuned in. I apologize for being late. I had to take care of a few things here, but I want to listen to my sister, Sister Leda. So glad to hear your voice, and inshallah, we'll just listen. And I'll try not to take up any more 30 seconds unless Ashley is required to do so with my two lovely co-hosts.
Every time that we hear that one.
We know how that works, Sister Leda. His watch don't, his watch part, he don't have no good time next.
No, he's right on time.
He got his own time.
Yes, we do.
Okay, let's take
three,
who was first?
347 and four digits are 3047.
All right, let's take that one first.
That's the last one.
Well,
all right, caller, I'm going to tell us your name and where you're calling from.
Assalamualaikum. This is Sister Sharon. Sister Mahasin. Yes, my dear. Good to hear your voice.
You too.
Thank you, pardon?
Look, you call from different numbers every week, Sister
Mahasin. Well, I only have two.
Okay.
Sister Layla. Assalamualaikum, Sister Amatala. Brother Planet, I'm very, very, very honored to be a listener on this program, and Sister Layla's comments were so stimulating because it gets to the confirmation of the truth of the matter, Sister Cheryl, that you are so adamant about in explaining and clarifying us in terms of that. Two reasons why I call. One, I wanted to share another research element that will go a long way to do with Sister Layla's husband, Imam Shahid Abdullah, has written about in how he researched and wrote the book Uncovering the Schemes, right? And it's a very, very enlightening treatise on what actually happened rather than the story that's been constructed and put together to deceive and set up the structure to scheme us out of our humanity, not only who we really are and the real intention behind the whole structure of the commodity of slavery. But all of the things, including capitalism and some parts of democracy that were, corrupted in the process and have been fed to us as a part of our legitimate governmental structure that we have to live under. I came across a book, friend of mine who does an intense amount of research and work in the arena of history, African-American history, and shared with me that was written in taking into account how the early forms of government Imam Pleeman was talking about, structured the schemes of deception from the get-go, we'll call it. And there is a book, that a series of books that were written, this one entitled The White Architects of Black Education, subtitle Ideology and Power in America, 1865 through 1954. And it was written
with the, hold on a second, I'm sorry, going through, as a means of planning how to corrupt the thinking of African Americans in terms of their freedom. Now, I just ordered the book, Inshallah, I have to take it to arrive. But when it comes, I would very much come back on the program and share some of what it talks about that confirms the scheming concept. This is broader in speaking with Imam Shahid Abdullah. He's expanded for us the notion of a scheme. We often think of it as a one-time trick. It's just an idea that people have. They want to accomplish a certain corruptive goal or injustice to you, so they'll play a trick on you. Right?
Right.
Sister
Madison, tell us the name of that book again. I do have another caller holding, but tell us the name of that book again. I want to write it down so I can make sure people... What's the name of the book again?
Hold on a second.
Okay, thanks.
Sister, it's a part of my husband's collection. It's called The Knowledge Collection. The specific book she's talking about is Uncovering the Scheme. I'll send you a copy of it, or you can just go to Amazon and Google.
Okay.
You can go to Amazon and put in Shahid Abdullah, and you can get all of his wonderful books. They're part of the Knowledge Collection. But,
that's what I'm speaking of.
And Sister Mahasan, we thank you so much for bringing that information. And also, if people want even more information, Imam Shahid will be speaking in New York and Harlem on the 18th. It's
on
a Sunday.
Excuse me,
Sister, I'm speaking. On the 18th, it's a Sunday. And if you want further information about Imam Shahid Abdullah and his books and his speaking engagements, you can give me a call at 708-698-0713, or you can call him directly, 908-296-2558.
That is exactly what we need. We need to make sure we get that information out on the air. That was perfect. Thank you, Sister Mahasan. Appreciate that. And next we have a caller ending in
7426,
right? Tell us your name and where you're
from. Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum.
It's Brother Muhammad from the Ummah of Prophet Muhammad by the way of Columbus, Georgia. And I just want to respond to what you said in the beginning of the program, like when y'all was talking about, your spirit. You're talking about your spirit in a sense. I forget the words that we use. I've been on the phone so long waiting to get in. But anyway, nothing is moving as to see you sisters, you know, coming out more and remembering that us men, we are inspired by you mothers, you aunties, you uncles, you wives, you sisters, you know, and you play a good role. And I want to apologize for me, not apologize for nobody else. But I'm letting you know I'm out there fighting every day to be your protector and maintainer of the life that Allah SWT has given you. And I know that if the women in Al-Islam, not no black woman, not no African-American woman, but the women in Al-Islam could get out here and do what you're doing now, but keep it to inviting other women to understand the beauty of being the servant of the creator of all of us so that they can really wake up. They can really see the benefit in what now they don't give y'all respect for because we're always talking about them. We're always talking about African-American women, black women, Caucasian women. We're talking about other women who sometimes we don't even mention their nationality. We don't mention, but we're talking about other worlds that we all understand that we're blocking the door to Allah's house because they can't get in because we're too busy telling them about what they're doing, what they're doing wrong, what they should be doing, how they false believe in it. when that's not the problem. The problem is to tell them about what's inside of this house called Nashia. What's inside of this way of life called Al-Islam. This is supposed to be the number one Islamic voice in America. But I just been sitting here an hour and 30 minutes, and I could be wrong, like I was telling my wife. I think I heard all of us talking. Only Allah's name has been mentioned about 3 times. I think the prophet's name might have been mentioned twice. And I just heard the brothers say Islam. So I'll give a little more credit. I'll say, well, maybe Islam has been used maybe about 8 or 9 times in this dialogue that we're hearing and this educational ta'lim that you're giving. But it's not talking about what the world is looking for. They're looking for us. They're looking for the one of life they've been watching us growing through in their history. Let them read about their own history so they can see how the slave, the person who they treated like an animal, is now making a couple $1 trillion a year as a community. They're not together, but this is their national budget. $3, $4, $14 trillion a year, and they don't spend none of it on themselves. They don't even have schools. And we talk about Muslims. We're not talking about women who call themselves black or Afro-Americans and all that. We talk about women who have taken an oath with their creator. They have told Allah, I bear witness, that there is no God but you, and Muhammad is your messenger, and I accept your way of life called Al-Islam. And I will establish a model halal, which only means a community that is permitted and obey only Allah, and we will help others understand that when they ask it, if they want to ask it. But we'll make
Thank
an
you.
Effort to give them.
I appreciate that. Now, brother, we only have to send Layla for a short. So
I respond to our brother Sharif?
Absolutely. Now I'm gonna put him on mute so I can let you respond. So thank you, brother. Go ahead, sister.
Okay, so first I'd like to thank him and for listening and thank him for commenting. I agree with him in that we as Muslims, specifically Muslimas, as he was speaking of, we do have a place in the forefront. But I also would like to say that Imam Waqif Muhammad was very, very intentional and very active about intrafaith and interfaith. So because as he taught me and many times probably said over the rostrum too, but he said that, you know, truth comes from everywhere. And then the truth, wherever the truth comes from, is coming from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The other thing that I would like to address is that people have different ways of speaking. And it's not, I don't think, right or wrong if we don't use certain terminology or reference certain things. It just depends on the speaker. The last thing I would like to say is that I think the best way that we can bring people to Al-Islam or that we can influence and share the life of a Muslim with someone that is not a Muslim is by being your best self and moving about and living and working and traveling. And as our Prophet Muhammad, praise and peace be upon him, said, being a mirror to someone else. You know, Allah makes Muslims, we live the best life, and hopefully it'll influence someone else. So I don't think I personally, someone else may want to do this, I don't make an intentional to say Allah, I don't make an intentional to say something about Prophet Muhammad. I make an intention to use my life as a Muslim who did accept the faith, not just born into it, but I actually made an intentional decision to continue to be a Muslim as I was raised. I use that, the Quran, my belief, the example of our prophet and the example and the lessons of all of the prophets, I use that to be my best self and hope that it will hopefully, firstly, save me from the hellfire, but it perhaps may influence someone else. So you know, I just don't think it's always necessary to use certain words. You do, you don't. It's that it's the message right is what I'm most intentional about.
I'm just gonna say ditto and go ahead, sir.
I could very easily say ditto, Sister Lynn as well, but I wanted to just reference one specific thing for our brother who just called in to thank him, and also to remind him that, you know, every Friday morning, a lot of us read the 18th chapter of the Holy Quran. The very last verse in that chapter says that if all the oceans were increased in numbers and all the trees were ink, we could never exhaust the words of Allah. So the words of Allah cannot be exhausted. It's your intent of your heart and your character that people see that defines your behavior instead of being one that submitted to Almighty God Allah. I wanted to add one little tidbit of history since we're celebrating our achievements this month. I want to challenge our listening audience to look up this man by the name of John Hanson, who was
Hanson,
H-A-N-S-O-N. He had a very specific role between 1781 and 1782. That role, believe it or not, brothers and sisters, was the first president of the United States when it was called the United States Continental Congress. And if you want to research him further, I encourage you to do so. But we've had our mark on this country from day one. And if you read the Declaration of Independence, there are 33 charges in the Declaration against old King John, or George, pardon me. And those 33 represent something very significant in the Masonic order if you would ever become a 33rd degree Mason. I'll end with that because I'm here to listen while I am to talk, inshallah. Thank you for another 30 seconds. John Hanson. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam.
I'd like to also make a comment in terms of what your brother said, and I appreciate his comments. I think it's good. We have to look at Allah addresses quite often, and the majority of the time, O you who believe, and maybe not specifically just pointing out, oh, ye Muslims. And so we are Muslims here in America, which is a diverse environment. And an important thing about dawah is when you're inviting people, you have to invite people in a language that will penetrate through to the people. And so I think as one of the co-hosts and with Cheryl and Fleming, we, in designing the program, our goal is to get Muslims and like-minded people to become more civically engaged and politically engaged so that we can bring about the change in this society that we want to see as Muslims. But in this country, there's no domination of any one religion, any one organized religion, any one scripture, although there are many who want Christianity to dominate or who may want Judaism to dominate. But we as believers, we want the truth to dominate, and we want to encourage Muslims, Christians, Jewish people, atheists, any people that have like-minded values to become civically and politically engaged. And this is important to realize this, the recording of this program goes online. And if you want to hear Talim, then go to the masjid. That's the appropriate place to hear Talim. Our purpose is not Talim, but we are inviting people to all that is good and all that is right. And we make a dua that Allah will bless us, that the programming that we give on this program, that it is, number one, pleasing to Allah, and that we do our best to do that, and that we work in accordance with Allah's will, inshallah, or God willing, for those who don't know, inshallah. And when I say Allah, I'm talking about the creator of the heavens and the earth. That's it, Sister Cheryl, for me.
Again, I say ditto.
Ditto.
to both our brother and our sister, alhamdulillah.
Both speak on it improves the silence, so I'm going to sit over here on mute. I agree with you. I'm not going to get into a battle because I believe that it is incumbent upon us to do that. I do want to, we've got about under 20 minutes left. I want to talk about some of the good work that you're doing, sister. I want to give you some time to talk about some of your projects. Talk to us. What you say? What you say? I know you don't like talking about yourself, but it's going to make you. You got the spotlight right now.
I'm going to put that hat on, but if you would kindly allow me to, I would say, segue into that. I want to read this poem that I think is relevant to the conversation we've been having. And it's a poem that I wrote some years ago. It's called American. Okay, it's called American Spice.
I love your poem. This is your section.
So the name of the poem is American Spice. Bismillah. Peppers, potatoes, tomatoes, greens, carrots, lentils, beans, corn, and peas in a big pot. They say a melting pot. Melting? Melting away? No. The beauty disappears as it blends. Individually, an individual uniqueness can't be found. Turn the heat down. Then again, just take the heat off. No melting. Take the peppers of all kinds, hot and sweet. Take the potatoes, sweet, red, white, purple, and gold. Tomatoes, steak, and cherry. Greens, collard, spinach, kale, arugula, Swiss chard. Have some baby carrots for a little crunch. Some lentils, some black navy pinto beans. Also, don't leave out the garbanzo. Then try a tricolored corn and baby June peas. Now, don't put them in a pot. We don't want them to melt. And definitely no heat. Make them clean, wash them up, cool them off, let them sit and chill, remain crisp. Put them in a big glass bowl so that all can see the difference. Let the beauty and uniqueness shine through. That is the American spice.
God, alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah. As for my upcoming things, so as I said earlier, I did one of the things that I love doing is we sat in a space of diversity, and we had a wonderful retreat. I work as an independent contractor with Compassion Action Foundation that is housed in Newark, we moved from Newark in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we've been doing building bridges programs around diversity for about 7 years now, but specifically in the last few years, we've been working with diverse retreats for women. And so that's what we just completed. What's coming up for me this month, on the 23rd, I'll be speaking for African American History at Duke University on their campus, and I'll be speaking about African American women, specifically around motivating benevolence. As our sister earlier was talking, that we can't ask for someone else to value us; we have to value ourselves. So the emphasis should be that we love ourselves and then we can love others. I think the Sister Amatala, she also said something that is so true, and I find myself saying it a lot, hurt people hurt. So if you're loving yourself and you've understood your pain and you've been able to walk through it and come out healthy, then you can help someone else. But until you have learned to love yourself, you cannot love someone else and definitely can't be benevolent with other people. And as our brother pulled our coat, I'm also going to say that you cannot love yourself without first loving the Creator, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the one God, that may be called by different names, but is the Creator of everything that we can imagine and everything we cannot imagine, and what we see and what we don't see. So you must have that first love, and then you have to love yourself. And it's said to us, you save yourself, you save your family, and you save your community. So that's what I'll be speaking about at Duke. And then the 1st of March, March 2nd, here in New Jersey at the Cineplex 12 movie theater from 7 to 11, we will be having our first Womb Gala. It's an awards gala where we're going to have about a dozen women that we're going to award specifically in education, business, art, and activism. It's a formal affair, so we'll be dressed up. We're actually going to have a red carpet. We have an interviewer, but I could say we have paparazzi, so they'll be flashing cameras and interviewing for a news station that comes on YouTube. And then we have opportunity for networking, which is very important. We'll have some book signings. Imam Shahid Abdullah will be there signing books. I'll be there signing books. A sister, Dr. Baina Jeffries, out of, where is she, Tennessee, I believe, yeah, Tennessee. She'll be there signing her book. And then we're going to be blessed to have the former wife of Muhammad Ali, Khalila, Dr. Khalila Camacho Ali. She'll be there signing her books. And every female, no matter what her age, no matter what her profession, when she comes, she will receive an award. And we will all be recognized. How this came about, this event, is because Allah blessed me to receive the Presidential Lifetime of Service Award. And when I first was told about it, I was like, what? Do I really qualify for Lifetime of Service? So I Googled and made sure that I had enough service hours done, and I did. And I shared it with other people, and they were like, oh, wow. So I didn't want to get caught up in my ego, and I had to think and reflect, and I said, well, when one achieves, we all achieve. Our prophet said we're mirrors for each other, so that's what I'm going to do. We're going to all get an award on this day. So, inshallah, we're going to recognize some wonderful females on March 2nd. You can use the number that I gave earlier, 708-698-0713. The tickets are just $20. It is limited spacing. We have a few hundred seats. And we're also asking you to bring hand sanitizer that we're going to donate to Domestic Violence Program. Excuse me. And we're asking that you bring a child's toy, something very modest, that we're going to donate to the E Committee here in New Jersey for the children. And lastly, but the cherry on the cake, is we will also see a documentary on Dr. Maya Angelou. So it's going to be a fabulous evening, inshallah. And that's what's on for the next 2 months. That's what I'll be doing.
I love it.
What's your date again for Duke University? When you be at Duke again?
Okay, so I won't mess up. I'm going to pull up the flyer, so I'll tell you exactly.
1 second. It's a Friday, so I'm going to tell you the exact date. So it says February 23rd, 6:30 to 8:30. I'm going to be at in the library at 217 Carmen Street, looks like it said. But if you text me, brother, I'll just send you the flyer, inshallah.
Yeah, my daughter works at Duke, my oldest daughter. She's the administrator at Duke University, Dr. Salima Hana, Bellamy Witherspoon. So I'll reach out to her. I'm sure she was involved in some capacity with that program. So I was trying to get our grandkids to come over to listen, my granddaughters especially, who live in that area.
Oh, I can't wait to see them. Inshallah.
And the 23rd happens to be someone's birthday on this program. I won't say who, but I'll give you an idea. He's speaking right now.
Oh, happy birthday. May Allah bless you with so many more. And we
thank
Allah for giving you life, and we thank your mother and your father.
Alhamdulillah.
That part that you just heard just now, that excitement, that was the girl that's the daughter of Wallace and Shirley. Birthdays mean a lot in our house. Yeah, Imam Muhammad said, we don't celebrate birthdays, but we celebrate life. Allah gave you life,
yes,
and we're sharing it together. So we would,
yes,
have a good time between the family. Yeah, so may your family give you a good day today, brother.
What's on the 23rd, actually? 23rd of February.
Oh, your birthday is on the 23rd. I thought you said your birthday was today. Oh, okay.
23rd.
Well, if you just come to Duke, I probably have a gift for you.
I'll buy a copy of your book. That'll be sufficient.
Alhamdulillah. I realized I was on mute when you were doing that, brother. I was over here talking.
What were you saying?
Well, I was always in charge.
He didn't hear it, sister. He didn't hear that. Probably being a smart aleck. this is wonderful. I love the name of the gala. I love it. The womb gala. That is fantastic. Fantastic. All right, we've got about 7 minutes left. Tell them how they can reach you, sister. Your website. You want to repeat the phone number?
Yeah, so my website is sisterlayla.com. And you can go to my website, and you can contact me through the website, too. But I will tell you that technology doesn't always work, because sometimes people tell me they sent me something through the website, and I don't receive it. But I have no problem with you calling me directly or texting me at 708-698-0713. However, if you call, it's best to text, and so I'll know, because I don't always answer numbers I don't know. But if you text me, no matter what, I'm going to respond to you. And if you are in a situation of crisis due to domestic violence or family loss or a close friend that has transitioned and you would like to speak to someone, you can call me. You can share my number with someone else that needs that service. And as the sister said earlier, I do coaching. I'm a life coach. And also we have Reiki. I do Reiki. And I'm a mediator. So if I can help you.
Tell them what Reiki is. A lot of people know what Reiki is.
Reiki is an ancient healing process, or you would say helping or medical process, but it's based upon the chakras in your body and the energy. And the Reiki practitioner does not have to touch you. The Reiki practitioner makes an intention to be used by Allah, or, you know, many Reiki practitioners are not Muslim, and so they would probably say God, or they may even say the universe. But we know that energy is real,
And we know that Allah controls everything. So when I'm working on someone, I make the intention and ask Allah to use me. I don't say use me to make that person better. I just ask Allah to use me. And in that space, I'll focus on the seven chakras of the body, and I recite in my mind quietly the attributes of Allah, short du'as. And at the least, people are relaxed. Some fall asleep and start snoring. And one brother who had cancer, he told me that it really helped him, and he his cancer was not cured, of course. I shouldn't say of course, but it wasn't cured, but he was able to sleep better. He could tell the pain wasn't as bad. Yeah, so that's Reiki.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And for those who don't know how to spell, it's Sister Layla, SisterLayla.com. And you can reach her there. Thank you very much, activist, educator, author, healer. Sister, we're so wonderfully blessed to have had you with us today, and we are going to ask you to come back and see us again and come speak with us again in a few months. We want to know how everything is going. We appreciate you greatly. Brother Fleming, Sister Monster, do you have anything to say before we get off of here? We've got about 2 minutes.
We'll just take 15 seconds just to thank Sister Layla for insightful contributions. In working with so many interfaith groups, I always start off with a simple quote. How does the Creator first introduce himself to a baby? And that's through the person that feeds that baby, protects that baby, provides for that baby with her body. That's the faithful mother. And that in itself says a lot. And I think the work that Sister Layla is doing is really emphasizing how important that role is in society in general. So thank you again, Sister Layla, for your contributions and your continuous work to improve humanity. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam. Thank all three of you, Brother Pleeman, Sister Amatala, and Sister Cheryl. Thank you. And Blog Talk Radio 360, thank you for the opportunity. May Allah bless you all and bring you much success. Ameen.
Thank you
Ameen.
So much. Amatala, you got about 25 seconds. You got anything before I close this out?
Yes, if you can, go to the theaters and see Origin, O-R-I-G-I-N, Ava DuVernay's latest film. It's well worth the money that you put out. It will come out with, I think, a whole different perspective on oppression, racism, and the caste system.
I love it, love it, love it. And for me, I'm going to say, stay powerful, stay purposeful, stay prayerful, stay politically engaged, participate civically, and lastly, I love what you say, Brother Fleming, we live in this terror industrial complex, which includes the prison and military industrial complexes. Don't forget the ethical, spiritual, and political stakes we have in these games. So when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at will to change. Have a wonderful, wonderful day and week, and do something to bless the day of others. Contribute to society. Assalamu alaikum. Hope to see you again next week. Stay blessed.
Wa alaikum assalam.
That's a wrap.
Ha, 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 ha.